All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true.
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Welcome, everyone. Now, this one, I thought that I would invite the, what would you call yourself, the dealership principal, dealer principal of Sani Excavators and Equipment in Victoria. Jono, hello.
Hello, how's it going?
Very well. So I thought I'd bring you here to discuss everything to do with Chinese diggers, manufacturing, construction.
Yep.
But first off, we should figure out a little bit about you.
Please don't.
Yeah, no, we've got to start from the very beginning.
Okay.
Start with your story.
The story of my life story?
I'll give a condensed version of that because no one really cares.
No one really cares about my life story.
No, they all want to get to Chinese diggers.
Okay, so do you want to know how we got onto this?
Yeah, please.
Okay, so our story. So obviously I'm a Kiwi. We're traditionally a Kiwi business. We started in New Zealand around about 5 years ago. Myself and my business partner, we both weren't from the industry. So that's probably the first thing I'd say is we had no knowledge of the industry. We didn't come from a construction equipment background. We saw an opportunity and essentially jumped on it, right?
Yep.
So start of COVID, we ordered, there's a bit of a backstory to it, but we ended up ordering, I think it was 17 excavators. And they arrived just as the borders shut down in the middle of the first COVID lockdown. So
sounds like great timing.
It was great timing. So it was a great, particularly going home to my wife and telling her that I'd ordered 17 Chinese diggers that were arriving into a paddock.
Yep. And how much did you know about Chinese diggers?
Well, fair to say not a lot.
Okay, good. Great. Yeah, so but you had 17 of them to sell?
We had 17 of them, yeah. Some of them even quite large ones as well.
So. Even better.
Yes.
And then where did you go to from there? So you advertised to get rid of them?
We advertised to get rid of them. We hired a sales representative, our first one, and essentially once we got out of the COVID lockdown, so once we actually figured out that the world wasn't ending, we got a premises, we got some staff, we found out someone who could actually generate an invoice, we found out someone who could actually sell the product.
How long did it take you to sell your first one?
3 months.
Oh, that's a long time.
Yes.
Yeah, that you would have been feeling like you possibly needed something else to do with 17 Chinese diggers.
Well, funny you say that because actually at the time we weren't too concerned because we were already sort of thought that the whole thing was stuffed anyway because we'd ordered them in the middle of COVID and no one knew what was going to happen. I mean, literally these arrived in, I think, April 2020 and the whole New Zealand was locked down.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't know if anyone was going to be in business in 12 months, right?
True.
So we soldiered it on. We sold our first one, a 1.8 ton excavator.
Yeah, killed it. I'm guessing you made like $2,000 on it.
Oh, yeah, probably $1,800 or something.
Yeah, great. So $1,800 over 3 months with two people in it.
Yes.
Killer.
Yes.
Yeah, cool. Great.
I'm not sure I'm going to be covering myself in glory here, but on our first sale, and I think I've told you this before, Jimmy.
It's one of my favourites. I was hoping you'd bring it up.
Yeah. We did figure out, part of our learning experience with excavators was finding out that they actually had attachments on them.
Mm.
So I remember the first we ended up selling our first machine, $28,500 for the base machine. Remember that well. And we went to it was all pretty loose. We didn't have too many agreements at that stage and we generated them an invoice off zero and customer rolls up and I remember the machine had all been cleaned and everything and he goes, where's my hitch and buckets? And we go, there's your bucket. It's called a rock bucket. It comes from the factory.
Yeah, and it's on the boom.
Correct.
And what's a hitch?
Yeah, and so we were scratching our heads and wondering what a hitch was.
Which one of you had to Google it in the background?
That it was a little bit of an oh fuck moment.
Yep,
so we said, look, give us a day. We'll come back and we'll re-deliver your machine to you. So I remember at the time our sales rep who we'd employed, who also did actually end up helping us with this. Managed to get one put on. We got a 3-bucket set up, tilt bucket put on it. Sent to the customer the next day.
What's really interesting is that one of the reasons I've invited you along, and actually one of the reasons I've employed a lot of my reps and stuff like that, is because you can't fake effort.
Correct.
You can't. You can teach someone knowledge. You can teach them and you can look up what a hitch is and what the buckets are. But you can't actually teach the effort to try and find them the next day. So my first sales rep actually worked for one of the dealers that I used to purchase machines off. And every time I used to ring him, I used to say, hey, mate, his name's Ash. Hey, Ash, what's the flow rate on the 15-ton? And he goes, no idea. And I go, cool, great. And he goes, but I will find out for you and I'll call you straight back. And then within an hour, he'd call me back and he'd say, well, I don't know if these numbers mean anything to you, but it's, I don't know, 150 litres per minute. I don't know if that's a 14-ton flow rate, might be. But and then he got the answers every single time.
Correct.
I think that that's sometimes good business. But I won't hijack your story anymore because you got the hitch. So now you've sold one.
We've sold one.
Yep.
So from there, we actually started to semi-set ourselves up properly. We had actually had it. We actually got a mechanic on pretty early. We figured out.
We needed him and they had no hitches.
Correct. So we, I'm probably not putting ourselves in a great light here, but the one thing I would say about us is we learn fast and we respond to what the customers want, right? So we learned pretty quickly that service was the key to actually growing it and that the product's just the product.
I don't know how deep we can go into having a sales pitch, but I do think that, you know, that comes into it, right? Like if you've gone from 5 years ago putting machines into a paddock.
Yes.
And not knowing what a hitch or buckets was to now how many machines have you sold or, you know, like you're in two different countries and, have a...
So we're over 1,200 machines out into the market now. We've recently delivered our first 100-ton plus machines. I think we were number 3 in Victoria last month in terms of market share.
Number 3.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
So for just number 3, Sani.
Yes. Yes.
Right. Okay. So number 3 in the market. Now there's a lot of big brands out there, and if you're number 3, well then most have to be below you rather than above you.
Yeah, correct.
So that's probably an interesting stat.
So we've already so our strategy was always to do Chinese product well, right? So what we did from the start, so after we went through that, I can give you 30 different examples of mistakes we've made along the way.
I like the mistakes, we'll lean into that because I like to lean on them. Well, the mistakes are actually what builds the character, I feel. Correct. And the mistake, you know, if we're going to be filming a 5-minute interview where you tell me how good you do, like that turns into an advertisement.
Correct.
And if you instead film a 1-hour long podcast where I tell you, that about the diggers that have sunk, the problems that I've had, and everything else like that, and then what we've learned from them so that you end up sitting here talking about real shit.
Real shit that people actually want to hear.
Yeah, real shit because at the end of the day, the person who's most likely going to sell Chinese diggers is you.
Correct.
Yeah, and it's, all of the machines, they're pretty close in how they dig. And all of the seats are pretty similar into how you sit in them.
Correct.
You get in 1 foot first and then you turn around, you plonk your ass on a cushion.
Correct.
Then they got to perform to a point, but then after that point, it comes down to how well you service them, how available you are, what your business model looks like. I know I've spoken a fair bit about the dealerships and problems that people run into because, you're not Sani.
No, we're not.
You're Virtu Equipment.
We're our own business.
Yeah. And if you're, the business is ran poorly, it doesn't matter how good the Sani product is, it's the outcome of it's going to be shit and vice versa.
Correct. Correct. The other thing, which also I'd say, is it also depends on what your OEM's mindset is.
What's the
supplier? Not the distributor. The actual manufacturer.
Oh yeah. Okay.
So
yeah.
If they, there's plenty of brands in the Australian market that are that are good brands worldwide, you know, good key brands worldwide, that they don't perform in Australia for Well, it's either of two things in my view. Either they haven't had the uptake, maybe they're not spec'd right for the market, maybe the dealer's not particularly, you know, pushing the product, or the OEM manufacturer is not interested in this market.
So while I was, because obviously I've been going 20 years or something, right, coming up to, if you had told me I was going to buy Chinese equipment 15 years ago, I would have told you you were on drugs or, you know, had too many chromosomes or something.
Yes.
However, part of that problem has been the people selling them historically.
Correct.
They've chopped and changed. They're running out of a tiny factory, you know, like they've got two or three people working for them. They might be in a different field altogether and just pick up a – I can think of a boom lift company, boom lift company that they have so many boom lifts that they fly over to China and they get the dealership for boom lifts.
Yes.
That's so that they can get wholesale boom lifts. That's not so that they can, like, flog a Chinese product.
Correct.
And
again, look, you know, we can go back to talking about all the mistakes that we've made, because I know you do want to dive into that. But what I would say about our business and with the learning is, from the start, one of our key principles has always been to do it well.
Mm.
And when I say do it well, I mean sell well. So import well, configure well, sell well, support well. We don't run it. We're not a hire business. We don't diversify out into 10 different things. We focus on what our core is.
What's really interesting, I had a guy here 2 weeks ago who said he was chasing perfection, mm-hmm. and you've toned that down, and you're well. Like, you sure you don't need to push that up a little bit and turn well into good, you know, or good into perfect? Adam was like, listen, we chase perfection every day. And you're like, I'm happy with well, right?
Yeah, but you're never going to you're never going to get perfection. And that's not to say you shouldn't aim for it.
Of course.
But you're never going to get it. So doing it well means, and I'm saying this, you know, relatively speaking to, say our Chinese, you know, competitors in the market, right?
Mm.
We need to do a bloody good job and a much better job at distributing our product into the market than they do.
Do you think you are?
I believe so, yes. I believe so.
Which is better to work in at the moment, New Zealand or Australia/Victoria?
Australia by far.
Why? Because normally New Zealanders will be like, New Zealand is the best, you know, like Australia is shit. And now all of a sudden you're sitting over here. I know you haven't told everyone that you've moved over here.
I relocated over in December, yes.
Yes, because of the fact you've seen the light and come to join the Australians and Victorians.
Yeah. Look, New Zealand, we still have a larger fleet out in the market in New Zealand. We've been there longer. That's where we obviously started our business. Mm-hmm. You know, the market in New Zealand's hard at the moment. It's been a hard 12 to 24 months, and it'll continue to be quite difficult. You know, we've still got some great customers there. We've still got a really good team there, and I think we've still got a big future there. But I also, when I relocated over here in December, my business partner is still in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. The intention of moving over here was to really drive our Australia business forward, because I could see that even though, you know, Sandy was starting to make some waves in Victoria, I don't think we'd even scratch the surface with it yet.
Do you think you're scratching it now?
I believe so, yes. Mm. Yes.
Yeah, so just from, like, obviously I've bought Sandy's. I thought it was a good idea to get you here and have a chat, and then we can talk about some of the – we've gone on a couple of trips together and had a – you know, it built up a little bit of a rapport.
Some would even call it a friendship.
Maybe a friendship. I describe Jono as a fifth tier friend. You know, not a fifth friend, but a fifth tier.
Well,
you
have told me I need to be less nerdy. So if I'm less nerdy, then I might be able to join the cool club.
Possibly. You sit at the front of the bus. I'm a back of the bus sort of guy. So, but I know from myself, like, just because never would I have purchased a Chinese piece of equipment.
Yes.
It takes a long time and a lot of effort for you to break down some of those stigmas.
Correct.
Of what's behind them. And everyone who's watching this would know that I've had a fairly good, positive experience so far. That's not to say that tomorrow we wake up and I have four Chinese tractors that blow a motor and, you know, the boom falls off and then me and you are pistols at 10 paces.
Correct.
But so far.
And I think, you know, I think what I would say is most, or if not all, customers are in the same boat. I mean, yeah. if you speak to the market about, I can't speak for other Chinese product out there, right? I can't speak for the trucks. I can't speak for the, you know, even the vehicles, but if, and even in some of our other brands. But if you speak about, you know, Sanny construction equipment in Australia and New Zealand, the feedback is good.
And why did you choose Sanny? So you've gone from not selling diggers to selling diggers.
So we...
Why? Like, that makes... Like, it's not something that you do. It's like not like, oh, hey, babe, I'm going to go down the supermarket, yeah, buy a loaf of bread, and, oh, shit, I'm coming back, and now I'm a dealership for a Chinese equipment. They're called Sanny, and, you know, they're really good, I think. So how does that happen?
Well, so the way you've just described it, is literally how it went.
Nah, bullshit. What, was it in between picking up eggs and picking up a loaf of bread that you decided Sanny?
It was, in a way. So we're, you know, I guess personally I'd always done my own, I'd always been a little bit of an entrepreneur. I'd always done my own things in life. I also had a corporate job. So I did come from a corporate background.
You don't look corporate at all.
You're about to say nerd.
Every listener heard nerd.
Yes.
I'd said corporate. But okay, continue on. So corporate spreadsheet.
So, you know, I love a good spreadsheet, James. But no, look, I sort of always deep down knew that wasn't for me. Mm-hmm. Needed to spread my wings or whatever. My business partner, he was actually the one who came up with
We're going to call him Raymond from now on. Hello, yes. Raymond, if you're watching this. I'm sure he will.
Yes.
So we have to call him by his name now, Raymond. Yes. So, which one of my favourite stories. Actually, I might digress just for a second. So I got a phone call from you very early on and you said there's some big guys over from Sanny.
Yes.
You know, worldwide, global, that have came to Victoria. They want to chat to you about some feedback you have on these machines. And I said, oh, I'm up in Queensland for something. And you go, please fly back. So I jumped on a flight early that morning. And I was going to get picked up from the airport and go back home, but then I didn't have enough time because everyone knows Jetstar, 1 hour delay, and then I had to
go. You just need to stop being so cheap.
Okay, anyway, because I will continue to be so cheap like I was on the weekend. And so I was flying back, didn't have time to go home, get changed. All I had was a T-shirt that I got delivered to me at the airport, and I came straight down to see you guys down there. And I walked in and your Chinese business partner, Raymond, is in a full tuxedo in a factory in Dandenong.
Yes.
With pants that were this much too short. And the first thing he looked at me and said when I walked in was, I forgot to pack socks. And I said, hey, Raymond. And he goes, I forgot to pack socks, but I think it's okay. And I said, why the fuck are you in a tuxedo? And he said, why aren't you in a tuxedo? And I said, what do you mean, why aren't I in a tuxedo? He goes, it's an important meeting. The global, they're here, you know, to have these. And he goes, why aren't you in one? Why do you only have on a T-shirt? And I went, I really wish I had a water shirt now. But the tuxedo's dumb. And I walked straight past him and then said hello.
And it's a strange combination. I mean, I remember when I spoke to some of my friends, you know, back in New Zealand about what I was doing and even spoke to my wife. I said, look, you know, I'm thinking of quitting my corporate career. And look, you know, We were reasonably comfortable. I didn't have to do this. Mm. And, you know, I said to her, I'm going to import Chinese diggers off a company called Sanny. And, you know, Raymond, who you went out for dinner with once, we're going to go into business together. So, you know, you can imagine when I told my family and friends about this, they were like, well, have you gotten into the drug trade?
Are you deranged?
Yes. And they literally thought that we were importing drugs.
Huh.
On these machines.
Interesting.
Yes. So we've come a long way. But I mean, I think, you know, again, and I'll take this back to, you know, where our business is now and how we've gone to, you know, what we're doing currently. I think, you know, what me and Raymond have is we're very aligned in our thinking. And that's very important in business, right? It's very important in a marriage. It's very important in business as well. And we're very in line with our thinking of what we want to do and how we want to run the business.
So you and Raymond, so then you tell your family that you're actually going to really be doing this.
Yep. And they said, look, see you in prison in 5 years.
Cool. Yep. And now they think you're New Zealand's gift to Chinese diggers. Is that what they think?
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
They think you have the Midas touch of...
Of course.
Of hocking. What I originally described to you, which you love to bring up, are shit Chinese diggers. And
But they're not. And I think that's that perception is, and we dealt with that a lot at the start, but that perception's changed.
I think everyone's actually dealing with it. And it's probably why I brought you on, because it's not about the diggers.
Mm.
It's about manufacturing in total.
Correct.
You know, we've got for the motorcyclist, KTM is being looked to be bought out by an Indian company, bailed out for, I don't know, however many billion, with the underlying, line item on the contract, you know, page one in red, saying all KTMs will now be manufactured in India. Now, I don't know what that looks like in 2 years, but I guarantee, you know, there's a lot of people out there with KTMs that think to themselves, I don't want an Indian KTM.
Change is coming. And I also think post-COVID the world has changed. Yeah. I mean, we can see it, but we can see it even in say, Australia and New Zealand, right? We've gone through this post-COVID surge where there's been, you know, money for Africa, splurging, you know, massive infrastructure projects underway. Now we're in a somewhat of a correction, right? Mm. And margins aren't going anywhere apart from down.
No, that's so correct.
And I think that's been the biggest thing is people are saying they don't want to compromise on service, right? Because you can't. Because if you have a machine down, if you have a truck down, if you have whatever down, it's really detrimental to your business.
Well, that's what I found. I was searching for a solution to a price decrease.
And really, you've only got so many inputs into business.
Correct.
You've only got your labour costs. You've got your
capital expense. Blah blah blah.
Correct.
You know, overheads are overheads. You know, as long as you're not running fat or skinny, you know, like really, you're within a banding.
Correct.
Or should be.
Correct.
Within a banding. But that's what I originally probably started to even toy with the idea of buying.
Correct.
Chinese. Like the rates were going down.
Correct.
Machine costs are going up, labour costs are going up, the overhead can't really be removed, like too much. Like what are you going to do? Sack all of the people in the office, you know, you're not going to run with, an accounts team.
And then so either what you do with your machinery is you either run them until they're old and require, you know, overhaul, repairs, continuous maintenance, or you...
Yeah, but you could. Well, but I've always ran under the motto that you can either have maintenance or you can have repayments.
Correct.
Whatever it is, it's the same shit. Maybe there's a Goldilocks zone where the repayments aren't there and the maintenance isn't high.
Correct.
But at the end of the day, you are paying for one or the other.
Correct.
And so robbing Peter to pay Paul, and that meant Chinese machinery is cheaper, and it's just that simple.
Mm-hmm.
And what percentage of cheaper depends on models and stuff like that. But that capital, especially with how the interest rates were, because it's not just the 100 grand extra that you're paying. It's the 100 grand at 7% over 5 years.
Correct.
Minus the increase in trade-in value or increase in, you know, when you resell it, what that looks like.
Yeah, and so that's where we focus on its value. So I try not to say cheap. I try to focus on value. And the reason I say that is because there's always going to be a cheaper product, right? But if you look at our principle, it's about offering the same service that you're getting with your incumbents.
Mm-hmm. Good word, incumbents. There we go.
That's why you can tell I'm a spreadsheet guy. but you don't, you know, you're not paying for that privilege. So
Not paying as much.
Correct.
For that privilege, because let me tell you, you're not giving them to me for free.
Correct.
But if you want to give them to me for free, of course, or if any machinery manufacturers do want to approach me with free machines.
Hey, hey, hey.
I'm your man.
Hey, hey, hey.
Apart from, you might have to work your way through a nerdy guy who blocks it.
I can fight as well.
I don't reckon you can. Might need to do a podcast with me first, but I'm here and looking for partnerships as much as Jono's happy with that. Okay, so
it's funny you say partnerships, though, because I think we have a partnership, and I think when you talk about partnerships, that's what I always say to our team as well, right? Whether it's our service team, whether it's our sales team, it is about partnership. It's about, you know, if you look at equipment, it's a large input. You know, we're not selling pipes, we're not selling a consumable item. We're actually selling almost a fixed asset.
Mm-hmm.
Right, for a period of time. So our relationship only starts with the customer at the time of transaction.
Good point.
Which is a good way to look at it, right? So it is actually a partnership. Now, what that looks like will depend on the customer. But, you know, you can see why this industry, and this is something we learned very, very early on, is you can see why the industry is so relationship-based. It's because it is a partnership.
Yeah, but we also, like, the biggest companies really still only, like, in the earth-moving space, let's say.
Yeah.
The biggest companies only sort of have a few hundred blokes.
Correct.
Like, overall, which means that the boss is most likely still incredibly available. You take the biggest software companies.
Yes.
No. They're
completely different.
Completely different, which means that there's still a way to transact with that owner. Correct. For you, which is probably, for me, actually one of the things that I like. You know, I've had problems at, you know, and rung you up at 9 p.m. when my day's finished and I've got a minute and you've answered and I've said X, Y, or Z about something that's happened in the day with, you know, usually at those times I'm saying that there's shit Chinese diggers. But all in all, always the next day, they're out being fixed. Which, correct, if I said that they never broke down, I'm lying.
It's a machine.
It's a machine. They all break down. Mm-hmm. But it's the answering, it's the effort, it's the guys coming out the next day. You know, I know I get good service. Like, I'm one of the few customers you have doing podcasts and shit. Yes. You know, so I think that has to translate to do I get something. You know, you'd be like, you know, Starbucks, like something's happened. Well, but overall, that ability to react to a problem still has to be there at a fundamental level, because otherwise it's not going to happen. Because if you were ringing a mechanic that didn't answer, well, then he's not coming. He's not going to come and fix the problem, whether it's Starbucks or anyone else.
But I also think it goes a little bit deeper than that. It's about, you know, like, obviously you can't do it for every single client, but as a general rule, I always try and say we need to understand our clients, because your business is different to, you know, XYZ, right? Mm-hmm. And what motivates you might be different to X, Y, and Z as well. So that's why the relationships are so important, is it's not just to catch up and go for a beer, but we do like doing that, by the way.
Yes.
But it's so you actually understand your customers and understand their businesses. If you can understand their businesses, that's all customers want.
Mm. So now, just moving away, because as we move through, I know that some people are going to be interested in this. You are how old?
32.
32, your business partner is?
32.
How the hell do you end up being the dealership for a country and moving into another state and selling however many diggers and doing whatever else you do, scaling a business?
Mm.
You have said that, you know, 5 years ago you had no employees in this space.
Yes.
Now you've got mechanics, service techs, different countries, everything else, sales reps.
Sales reps.
Finance.
Managers, finance, CFO, the mechanics, the full shebang, Yep. We are not a small business.
Yeah, how did that go?
Yeah, it's been real fun. As you can see, I'm losing my hair.
Yep, good. Yep.
So, and there's grey hairs there.
Yeah, and most challenging part?
All of it. So I think, you know, we've scaled the business over some pretty challenging times. So it's not like we've scaled the business whilst there's been a lolly scramble. We've probably had 12.
Lolly scramble, I like that. There we go. Now you know you're a New Zealander is in the room.
Fish and chips.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah,
thank
you. Socks.
But, you know, we've had probably 1 year, 2021, which is an excellent year for everyone, right? Came out of COVID, everyone was doing well.
I'd have to break out my spreadsheets. But, yeah, I know that the last 2 years have been shit.
Yeah.
The 2 years before that were COVID, which are great, but also really challenging and unsustainable. And looking back, do you wish that that hadn't have happened in the way that it did, because we wouldn't be in such a rough patch now if we didn't have that 100%. Patch then, and it could have been a more linear sort of
growth. It's been a whiplash for everyone.
Yeah.
So everyone, including us, expanded massively, and then it was pulled back like
massively
as well. Yeah. So you've had all that. So that's been a massive challenge. I think all the challenges, which I'm sure a lot of people listening to this and just other business owners will know around systems, processes, having the right team. We're fortunate we've got a great team. But
you have to build a great team.
You've got to build a great
team. Not everyone forgets, but they say, it's so important to have a great team. And you go, okay, how do you build one? And you go, you hire the right people. And you go, how do you attract the right people? And they go, well, you advertise in the right way, you pay the right money. And then you go, yeah, but if you sit down in an interview and you're a plank of wood, then they're going to go, yeah, I don't want to work for you.
And also they've got to believe in what you're doing.
And how do you make people believe in Chinese tractors?
And it's hard. It's extremely hard.
Faith and trust in a 27, 28-year-old who's saying, I'm going to sell diggers. And we haven't even spoke about the fact that you sell to some of the islands around the area and stuff like that, which I found really interesting. You told me one day a year or two ago you just opened up a yard in
Samoa.
And then actually you called it a you gave it a name. You opened up a new dealership resident can't remember. And I'm like, oh, yeah, what is it? You said, beautiful, it's crushed rock with a fence. Yeah, hell yeah. That's what I'm talking about. Now you're in three countries.
Yep. And we're in, we do a bit in New Caledonia through a partner there, and Tahiti as well. So, there's a bit going on. And then it all sounds great, but it adds complexity. It adds risk. It adds... it just adds more and more and more.
Yeah, but it's like money. Like the money.
And
like
so look, don't get me wrong, you've got to have deep pockets to do this. I don't pretend that we're, anywhere near yet the top tier dealerships, but I mean they're billion-dollar companies. Mm. So of course we're not. But we're also not flogging these things out of our garage. So you've got to have infrastructure.
Yep.
And you've got to have a significant infrastructure in order to do it and do it well. And that also goes down to the perception, because we're obviously making sure that we're trying to distribute a product in a quality fashion well. And in order to do that, you have to hold a yard. You have to have a workshop. You have to have field
parts.
You have to have parts.
You can't have one part. You have to have millions of dollars worth of parts.
Correct.
And you would have noticed the big ramp up at the I'm thinking just with us, like the ramp up that you go from, okay, it's a certain point, it's like, I don't know, 10 diggers, 15 machines, whatever, that you end up saying, shit, I need a container full of parts.
Correct.
And then the container full of parts needs a ute to go out and fix them. Like, this is just from my end.
Yes, and then how do you control the parts? What are your systems and processes? What parts should we be holding? What parts shouldn't we be holding?
And then Scott hasn't done his job, and he hasn't done the inventory, and we haven't done whatever, and now you're sending out machines that don't have parts, that are broken down, that all of this. Now, that's the part that I actually find really interesting and one of the most challenging, because though I've gone through so many different stages of that. We're talking even now, like we didn't audit our buckets. I don't know how many dollars worth of buckets I got. I got half acre full of buckets. Mm. Pick up buckets, send it out to a job, and you look like a fool when the buckets comes and they've got cracks or the teeth are falling off or it needs to be welded up.
Yes.
You have the similar thing. Now, mine's maintenance, but yours is, a checklist of a new machine that comes.
Inventory.
How do you tell, that you have enough parts on the shelf for a scissor lift?
Well, so we work in pretty closely with our supplier. So we're pretty lucky that I believe we've got a killer combination. So as I say, with Raymond and a couple of our staff being Chinese, and then we have a lot of obviously local staff as well, but we can deal with the factory, I believe, quite easily. And Sani, if I give an example, they're great. A lot of people don't know this, but they actually built their business in China. They became number one in China based off service. So it wasn't actually anything to do with their product. They seem, they obviously think it's good, but they built their business in China through service.
So what number are they in China?
Number one. Yeah. Number one. And then one of the, obviously one of the largest in the world, top five, top three, whatever stat it is. But, you know, they're quite good to deal with in that space. So they recognise that, you know, your service and parts are key to success. So they help support us with that. So they tell us what we need. We go back to them and say, are you sure?
Yeah, but do they tell you to pay for it?
Yes.
That's the other problem, yeah?
Yeah, of course. Like, and we're a customer, right?
Yeah, well, yeah. At the end of the day, I can ring up my customers and tell them that they need $200,000 on the shelf.
Correct.
And they should need to buy that from me.
And that's where I say you need to still have you still need to be able to make that call internally, right?
How do you make the call when you don't know what a hitch is?
So that's where you have the right people, and that's where you learn.
Yes.
So you need to question every decision that you make, and it's tiring.
If you don't earn, you learn. So I'm guessing that you've learned a bit.
We've learned a lot. We've learned a lot. We've learned a lot. I won't say it's the fun of it, because it's been extremely challenging, but at the end of the day, you ask me how did we scale the business as we have? And I think if I was to summarize it, I would say it's having the right people that align with your vision.
Mm-hmm.
And that is hard. And you'd have the same with Starbucks, you'd have the same with a lot of business. You know, if you're a fencing contractor, I don't know, and you decide
that's the
guy you
want came on.
Okay.
He was on. Adam's
okay.
on.
Okay.
The fencing from $3,000, I think it was 5 years ago or something. I could get the 5 years, somewhere around there. Similar. That's $20-something million in turnover in fencing.
Correct.
Business partner.
Exactly. And if you say that you want to, I actually just picked that. That's a total coincidence, by the way. But if he
watches the podcast, he just forgets.
Okay. Yep. If you pick that and say, look, I want to be. You know, I want to be $100 million a year fencing contractor, right?
Mm.
How do you then incentivize, but how do you get your team to align with those objectives? Because on the way, your team are going to have to deal with a lot of shit.
Well, I've found, but part of the problem was, I was going to say a great tagline, which is, it's not the pursuit of happiness, it's happiness of the pursuit.
Correct.
Right? So, like, the journey is actually the destination.
The fun bit.
That's the whole bit.
Correct.
That's the hard bit, that's the fun bit, that's the bit that you want to keep going. That's the, you know, if you get to the end, it's shit. But you don't actually want a team that is a $100 million team. You need a team that is growing with you, that when you're turning over $5 million, they are who they need.
Correct.
10, 20. And, you know, because a $10 million company can't turn over 40.
Correct.
But it can turn over 20.
Correct.
And so the growth of the people, and this is part of the challenge I've dealt with so much, and I still don't have the answers, and I don't know, and this is where I talk to a lot of my friends about, like, you know, I've had managers who were so good at 10 and they're so shit at 20. And then by the time you get to 30 or 40 million, they're great again.
Mm.
And how do you sack them? Do you train them? That, like, where you go to all sorts of training courses and talk, and, you know, just, you know, I take them to places and beers and coffees and breakfasts and dinners, and I don't know, you know.
But I still believe that it all comes down to attitude.
Of course,
it does with everyone, and, you know, even as a business owner, it all, because everything can be taught. It doesn't mean you will necessarily be the best at it.
No.
But if you have the right attitude and you have the right dedication, you can succeed. There's no reason why you can't.
Yes. I also think that the society says that everyone can do everything and all you have to do is put your mind to it.
But some people don't want to.
Yeah, and some people don't want to. But some people, like, not everyone can be an astronaut. Like, even if they wanted to.
That is true.
Right? And I'm of the same opinion that not everyone could run your business, mm-hmm. even, no matter how much they put their mind to it. Mm-hmm. Maybe most people could run mine, I think, because, you know, digging holes and trucking dirt. But there is a difficult element of that that says that you have to have someone in the right space at the right time as you're building. And sometimes they end up with some incredibly challenging decisions to have as a Correct. Business owner. You know, we've both gone through terrible employees. No one mm-hmm. likes to talk about terrible employees mm-hmm. because, you know, it's almost a taboo subject to talk Correct. About the fact that some employees are shit.
Correct.
Real shit.
Correct.
I've had guys gambling, mm-hmm. you know, gambling addictions, sex addictions. I've had criminals work for me. I've had people who stop. I have a story. Actually, I'll share this one. I get a phone call long time ago, 15 years ago, about a guy who's selling diesel.
Your diesel?
Don't ruin the story for everyone in the back end. He's selling diesel. It wasn't that much cheaper. You think you know that it might be hot, but also it might not be hot. He might be a guy that is going bad in business, you know, and he's purchased 30,000 litres in his tank. And if the going rate's $1.50, he's charging $1.20. So it's worthwhile exploring. Jimmy is selling a 1,000 litre a drum for $1,000, which I think that the going rate at the time was about $1.30. So it's about, you know, it wasn't too cheap, but it's cheap enough. So I ring him and it actually comes up. I won't say his name, but it says Starbuck Foreman.
How was that day for you?
Painful.
Yes.
It was a painful day because that guy there, I kind of liked him too. He was in charge of a big job site. I think we were using, let's call it 10,000 litres a week out at then. It was a fair long time ago now, so I can't remember exactly the numbers. If you had have asked me at the time, I would have told you exactly how much we were using. And, you know, that's so hard for an employer. That's so hard for this because what do you do? Like, what's the avenue of recourse for that? Like, if we dismiss someone badly, you know, or if we do the wrong thing, like sometimes we're dragged over hot coals. Correct. What about the guy who's obviously stealing my diesel? And all you can do is I let him go and I paid him out his 2 weeks' notice because otherwise he could come and he could say that it wasn't my diesel and, you know, everything else and blah, blah, blah. And then you left. You're stuck. You're actually handcuffed a little bit.
Correct.
You know, in what you are and aren't allowed to do.
But I think the thing is you know, I'm not saying everyone goes through situations where people are stealing their diesel, but anyone who's scaled a business or is scaling a business goes through similar.
But it can be like it doesn't always have to be as criminal either. It can just be hours, or it can be the fact that, you know, people want a day off when you don't, when you so desperately need them to have a day off. Like it hurts when they text.
And we've all been there. And that's where I go back to the biggest challenge, and it's in any business. You know, obviously it can be difficult with our business and our product line historically. Is finding the people that can see the future and can see the vision that you're trying to, well, you know, and can see what you're trying to achieve and believe in the product, because you never have to worry about any of that stuff again, because they're never going to slack off because they're passionate.
I got people who care more about Starbucks than I care about Starbucks, I feel. And I know you've met some of them. Yes. You cut them open and blood doesn't come out of Starbucks, sticker agree. Does.
Yeah.
You know, I know that I've met people that work for you. And if I don't necessarily always think that it's the leader, I know that the leader does play a part of that. That of course being separate than the boss, you can have leaders.
Yep, they're different.
They are different. It also has to be part of the product, and also that you're selling whatever it is, like you're selling Chinese equipment, and then I'm selling a trucking service.
Correct.
But when they deliver on that trucking service and when they feel like they're part of the team, then all of a sudden you have this, you know, these people who just start to pull harder than you do, you know. And
that's the beauty of business is if you – and that's why we've always focused on scale is because, you know, done right, we believe anyway, your business then becomes – and your service or your product becomes self-fulfilling.
Yes. Well, it does because, like, you're not – like, it doesn't matter what they deliver because if you have the best mechanics on the face of the planet, well, as long as it's – the componentry is at a certain level.
Correct.
You can fix the rest of it.
Correct.
You know, like, as long as my trucks rock up and move the dirt, as long as I dig that hole to a certain standard or have the ability to dig it to a certain standard.
And I believe as whether it's a boss or leader, there is a difference, but as a leader – It's your responsibility. Sorry, to open up opportunities for those right people to really execute on it.
Well, I probably still, Oh, it's probably changed in the last few years. But up until a few years ago, I was still the number one sales rep for my company. Mm. 15 years after I started, people doing their job full-time in sales, and I probably was equivalent numbers, revenue, whatever you want to put it down as. That's probably started to change or has changed over the last few years. But I'm passively selling. I know that you still actively sell, but I was passively selling and still putting out great numbers.
Yes, yes.
But all the time I'm passing them down the chain to people, like the new rep that comes on gets the opportunities to, you know, they're not necessarily having to go out and do all of the hard graft, find someone, you know, introduce, convert, you know, and then actually help with the back end. I know that Ash, the sales rep I mentioned before, who came from William Adams, he's been with me about 8 years now. When he used to ring people, he used to say, "Hi, Starbuck, I'm looking for you." And they go, "What?" And he goes, "Starbuck." And they go, "The coffee." And he go, "No, well, we dig holes, truck dirt. I'm the dirt trucker man. I'm here to help you move your dirt off of a job." Now we've got new sales reps, and when they ring up in the market, most people know Starbuck.
Who you are.
Yeah, and so now that's got a different complexion on it. I'm sure that if you're saying that you've reached number three, the conversation you're having now is about price, it's about backup, it's about this, it's not about Sani.
Who are Sani? Most people generally know it now. They're more concerned about, well, what's your backup like?
Backup and resale is what I get asked about the most. Yep. I've spoken to people a lot. At a certain price point, the resale doesn't matter.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I was with quite a large client yesterday, and we were running through their. It was actually a board submission for them.
Oh, listen to him. Say it again. Yeah.
No.
Board submission.
The you know, if you very clearly put the numbers down, we still come out on top, even if you put our residual value in at zero.
Yes. So I did it with my accountant, and we sat down, and there are price points that you must reach.
Yes.
That by the time, if your maintenance is the same, your productivity is close to, which how I describe it to people is I cannot get people to hold on to the sticks for long enough for another machine to outproduce, enough, because there's TikTok, there's Facebook, there's wives, there's or husbands, there's kids, there's life.
Yes.
And so if out of 60 minutes they're holding onto the sticks for 45 minutes, in that 45 minutes, if I can just get the person driving the Sani compared to the other one for 2 minutes longer, does that make up the difference? Most likely. So the productivity is the same. So now we're talking resale. Take into account the capital that you put in, the finance, the rate that capital's bought at, even if you're paying cash, because you're paying now 7, 8, 9.
Use of money.
Use of money. So whether it's my money or the bank's money, it all costs whatever that going rate is. Over 5 years, where do you come out?
Correct.
And then what can you do with the money you got in your pocket? That's not even including that. Like my accountant said, Jimmy, like for a 35 or a 50 or 20, whatever it is, this is what you have been paying historically across the board. This is the rate that you need a Chinese digger at. You're under that. Put it in the bin. Like at the end of 4 years, it's got to make it there.
Yes.
Now, if it don't make it there again.
And that's a good point, because I think that's where we are with a lot of clients now, is it's around, okay, can you guarantee the longevity of the product, and what's your support and backup like? And that's where we're trying to make.
Is that the next hurdle for you guys? So first off, you've got a hurdle of, you have to try and get them into the market. Now, you obviously are at some point, like I see them around now. You never saw them before. But now is the next hurdle from getting them into the market to actually put your money where your mouth is, Jono, do you have the backup? Do you have these parts? Like, it's all good to sit on a podcast in Somerton, but
have we made the investment? Of course. Of course. And I'd be lying to say that as we grow that we won't make mistakes. But again, it goes back to your mindset as a business owner and what you want to achieve out of the business. So, I mean, of course, yes, right? So we had a couple of large machines arrive this week. We've actually bought...
You tell everyone the size you got here. Come on.
We've got an 85 and a 50 ton.
There we go. Now we're talking.
A couple of others, yeah. And we had a couple of 120 tonners a few weeks ago as well. And what we did with those large machines is we bring in specific parts for those units. Now, we don't have to do that. As a dealer, we don't have to do that. But we don't have to over-order the parts and have them sitting on that shelf for that particular client.
But does that make you make – that can't make you make money?
No.
Like, I'm
– No, but it, build, joined, but it builds momentum.
I've just joined column A to column B.
Yes.
You have parts sitting there. That's literally your profit that you've taken out of that machine deal to then put on the shelf.
Yes.
Now, if you don't get another one of those machines, I don't think you can return those parts, can you?
And that's why we've never once paid a dividend from our business in the whole time we've operated.
Yeah, because it's all sitting on a shelf.
Correct.
In hydraulic pumps or fan belts.
Correct.
But you do have a fan belt.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, okay. Good.
Maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, but we've got it. And the other thing is we've got enough of them out there in the market now that we generally know what can go wrong with them. And we generally support them. We're not perfect. We're not perfect. No one is. And that's where you talked before about the perfection. I mean, look, let's aim for perfection, but let's actually just do it well.
Yeah, let's shoot for the stars and land on good.
Correct. And do a good job, communicate with your customers, push the product hard, push your business hard, build relationships, and you will succeed.
Now, I am interested for you to tell everyone about how we ended up in Serbia.
During a government protest.
Was slightly strange. It was the good government protest.
Yes.
It wasn't the bad one. We got told that the weeks before there was a bad one. But how did we end up in Serbia, Jono, for a weekend?
I'm still asking. It's exactly like how did you get into this business? I've just got in getting into these situations I just can't explain.
With 17 Chinese diggers in a paddock.
Yes.
No buckets.
And then I end up in Serbia.
Yeah, so how did you start from corporate life, filling out spreadsheets, to being Belgrade for a weekend?
So something that I always say is whatever you do, do it to the best of your ability. And that's a cliche, right? I get it's a cliche, but if you stop and think about it, whatever you do, just go hard at it and do it well, right?
Yeah,
okay. Do it as best as you can, right? So whether it's Chinese diggers, whether it's socks, whatever.
Yeah.
So whatever I'm doing or whatever we're doing, we're gunning. We're gunning forward and we're absolutely driven to succeed. So obviously with how do we end up in Serbia? So we've obviously the client actually who has purchased our 870 and 50 tonner, he is from Serbia.
Yes.
And
he's one of my friends.
He is. So he is. And I will give the shout out for the that was a transaction which Mr. Jimmy Starbuck
down to the end.
Referred through to us.
Good referral. Just remember that other machinery manufacturers that want to partner with a referral of a 90 and 50 ton. You're welcome. Yeah. And continue. So
you've got to go on a podcast first, right? I don't recommend it. So part of that deal, and there was one or two other machines in there as well, but part of that deal was I essentially had to, well, not had to, mm. I had to.
You know, kind of, yeah, yeah, had to.
Travel to Bauma in Germany with you.
Yes.
And we went there together, didn't we? We had a great time in Dubai, then a good couple of days in Bauma.
We did. And then where did we have to go?
Serbia.
Serbia for the weekend.
For the weekend.
And so the best part about this entire story is that what happened to the guy who we were meant to travel with?
The client pulled out at the last minute.
He pulled out, yeah. So then we had all of our flights booked, accommodation booked. He sort of wasn't in or out until the very last minute.
And then he was out.
And then we were stuck.
Traveling to Serbia.
Well, we couldn't get our flights changed from Dubai.
Mm.
And so we had to figure out if we were going to take 3 days somewhere around Munich, which we had to leave, and then maybe get down to Belgrade. So then we said, right, what we're going to do is we'll hire a car because we don't necessarily want to spend 3 days in Belgrade only. Mm-hmm. We're going to hire a car and then we're going to drive Hungary, Romania. No, it's not Romania. So whatever it was, Slovakia.
Through Budapest.
Yeah, going to have a sick time and then we're going to get into Belgrade last day and piss off home. Well, then we get a phone call from him. He's just pulled out and he says, no, you can't do that. You're not going to be able to get into the city because of the government protest, and I've organised for you to get to your hotels and pick you up and everything like that. So then we were stuck flying to Belgrade with government protests on, spending 3 days together. And it actually ended up, if anyone wants to go to Serbia.
It's a great country. I would 100% recommend it. I think we're going to do a Balkans trip at some point, aren't we?
Balkans trick. If anyone wants in, Jono sells them for 90 tonnes, 50 tonnes, and a couple of others probably. Please come to me first for the referral.
But I think if you go back to, well, why did we end up going on that trip, and I think you're very much the same, is sometimes it's just about saying yes.
Yeah, so I go on a lot of trips and they actually have two great benefits for me. My networking, you have a captive audience, you know, mm-hmm. you're there. You know, if you can go on these trips and talk to people yep. and you're getting to know people at a different level on them, and that I find customers from them. I find friends from them. I've got some great friends from around the world and from around Australia that I've met on them.
Well, I'd give the example of Serbia. I mean, we obviously, the client ended up pulling out, but his general manager came along with us. And so this client who'd spent, you know, significant amount of money with us, I actually didn't know very much about his business, but I now know a lot about it.
Yeah.
Because we spent time really understanding what they do, what their challenges are.
And you probably can sell to them better now and 100%. Support them better.
100%.
And then the other part is I find that when I'm on those trips, I create a little bit of space underneath me. I can have the tendency sometimes in my business that I have to work against, which is to micromanage situations.
No.
No, a little bit.
Are you a type A personality? You seem quite complacent.
Yeah, I'm soft and gentle passive, and well-rounded. Passive, I'd say. Yeah, well-rounded and passive.
A bit dull.
Yeah, that and I don't put myself out there a lot. So, I can understand how you made that mistake, but I can – obviously, I've moved a lot of dirt. I've trucked a lot of dirt. I've dug a lot of holes. If someone comes to me with a problem – sometimes I join dot A to dot F. Mm-hmm. Now, we have processes to get to dot F mm-hmm. now. Mm-hmm. We have emails that need to be written, correspondence that needs to be done, contracts that need to be, you know, bought up, page yes. 6, line item 7, you know, paragraph 3.
Yes.
We have to bring that up. And so I found probably... in the last 5 years, I've really fucked everyone up sometimes when I get involved. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong.
Could never imagine why.
I can get a deal done. Well, I can move some
you
dirt.
You are a deal dog.
Yeah, but, like, you know, sometimes we don't get paid from it or have in the past because, you know, there was one clear example of a couple of years ago. They were under some real heavy time frames mm-hmm. a few years ago to get stuff done, and they came to us and they said, listen, we're not going to be – the ground's mush. Mm-hmm. We need to pull it all out. We need to bring a piling rig in. We got 2 days, got a shitload of dirt to move.
Get it done.
I said, no worries, got you. All the trucks, machines, pull it all out. You know, bring in all of the type A material, and I won't get too technical, bring in the type A, make it really hard, you know, and then they bring it in, and then I went to go get paid and they go, where's your sign off and approval? And I'm going, well, Bob gave it to me, and they go, Bob no longer works here. And you go, fuck. Here's some emails from Bob, and they say, okay, that's great, so we can pay you for what Bob wrote. And you go, no. There was other parts that we had. They're in text messages to Bob, and here's some photos. And they go, Bob wasn't licensed to approve that, or Bob didn't have the ability to approve that. And that my office never would have had that happen. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you've ran into similar circumstances.
Multiple times. I'm sure my team curse whenever I go and do a deal.
Yeah. And so Serbia. Then we walked around for a day and night.
We did.
you got sick and pulled out because you're soft. And and the general manager, we actually went out the night of the big government protest. There was 300,000 people in the city, flares, fireworks. So, but we're walking through the town and then they let off these fireworks and they sounded like bombs and there's sirens and everything running everywhere. It was a lot. However, Serbia, great place to go.
Great place to go.
Would go back in a heartbeat. 100%. I think that most of Europe for me has taken on a bit of beige complexion.
Correct.
Where everyone's seen 1,000 New Zealanders, 1,000 Australians.
But it's different.
It's just Serbia's got a little bit of difference to it.
I think if we keep saying yes, Jimmy, we're going to travel more places together than we will live with our wives.
Possibly. Or not only that, I could partner with someone else. I've already been with you to somewhere. I keep bringing this back up, but enjoying it, actually.
You are.
Because there's some guy sitting on a – I actually had a thing that I spoke about at ConExpo because I was doing a bit of a chat at ConExpo and I was up on this on this panel thing and we were having some conversations forwards and backwards and I was saying about how brands in the construction space, they don't actually care about people with big influence on social media channels. But very soon there are going to be people who do. Now, I'd say we've partnered together. You care more than most. But I can remember going to buy machines and being like, you know, like, do I get a bit of a discount? I have 6 million people a year or 7 million people a year view my shit.
Well, I'll give you an example. So while we're talking about marketing, I think we do our business. I mean, obviously Starbucks does an amazing job of marketing. I think we do a pretty good job of marketing as well. We've got a wonderful marketing manager, and we always push the product. Mm. When we started the business, one of the things that we did, which no one else did in the industry, was advertise our pricing, which seems odd, right? No. Customers will call us and we will tell them the pricing. And, you know, and we were being shifty and, you know, there was, you know, you price it up and you're adding margins on this. We're like, nah.
That's the price.
Here's your price. Here's your machine, three buckets and a hitch when we figured out what they were.
That's important.
That was the first step. But here's your product. Here's your price. If you want to add other stuff onto it, go for it. We can do that. We can work in with you. But here's what we're offering. Here's our package. The second thing that we did was we utilised social media. So no one else advertised on. I mean, there might have been, but I don't think people were doing it.
As much
was advertise hard on Facebook, Facebook ads, Instagram ads. Everyone's doing it now. So everyone does it now. We've actually pulled back our advertising on that space because, you know, for a variety of reasons. But I remember at the time that was something that the industry was just not accustomed to. And then suddenly people started, our competitors started doing more and more of it. And so I think you're completely right. There's clearly it can be a little bit slow or a little bit late to the party.
Well, I've got decent channels all around, like whether it's Facebook, Instagram or whatever. But and I'm probably putting you on the spot right here because of the fact that I have bought some of your stuff. But you know, if I was a makeup influencer, I probably would never have to buy makeup again.
Just to clarify, though, you would never be a makeup influencer.
Thank you very much, John. I appreciate that.
Yeah, but if you would like to try, it'd be quite funny to see.
It's just so interesting because I've also had, like, you know, gone to, you know, different brands and been like, can I have 5% off? And they're like, what? No, fuck no. But don't worry,
I think the thing is, and you know, and I think we talk about the influencer side of things, is I think the thing I like, and again, I'm putting you on the spot here, but I think what I like about the partnership that we've created is it's authentic. So before you, like, obviously I gave you a pretty good deal on the machines, but before all of that, I was quite clear, and I think you were quite clear as well, that you wanted to make sure that you actually.
Yeah, I didn't want to look like a goose, yes. And I have the propensity to. Good word, that one too. Like, I got the.
You're smart.
Thank you. My parents made me do homework, but I got the propensity to make myself look like a goose sometimes, really bad. And if I was going to go out and buy some of these things, like, I desperately didn't want them to be a hunk of shit.
Yep.
They're not a hunk of shit. They're just a machine. And right. I've had brand new machines of every flavor break down. I've had one break down on the float and I can't get it off, right? And I've had full rebuilds done. I remember I got a full rebuild on a machine. It didn't start to get off of the float.
Correct.
And then once it got off, it was empty of hydraulic oil. It took 600 or 700 liters of hydraulic oil. It needed like 400. They'd forgotten to fill it up all the way. They'd just put the test amount in it and then they'd never checked it.
Correct.
That wasn't you guys. That was someone else. But every single brand has problems. Everyone's heard of lemons. You can have a lemon that's a Ferrari or a lemon that's a Toyota or a Kia or whatever it might be.
We gave you a lemon roller.
You did give me a lemon roller.
You had a lemon roller. Like there's no point hiding or denying it. You got a roller and we just could not figure out what the issue was.
It was hunk of shit. But then
okay. And what did we do?
You gave me a new roller.
And how's that roller?
Really good, actually. I've got a funny story about that one too. Okay. Right? Actually, I'm full of funny stories today. Ah. So I rocked up on a job site and I'm looking at the roller. And this is no shit because it actually paints you guys in a really good light. Okay, so
about time.
Thank you, because I've been giving you a bit of rubbish. But I rocked up at a job site and I'm looking at the roller and I'm like, my roller's got stickers on it. That roller ain't got any stickers on it. And I'm like, where'd the stickers go? So I start calling around. First off, hey, does my roller have stickers? And people are like, yes, I'm checking my phone for videos of the roller. It might definitely has stickers. It's got no stickers on it now. So then I'm like, oh, fuck. We've put a roller on hire, forgotten to take it off. And mind you, I've sent this roller to two or three different people out for dry hire for months, right? Haven't actually seen the roller for months. So I'm thinking to myself, oh, my God, I've left the roller somewhere on site. My team hasn't picked it up. And now I'm going to people who probably or maybe haven't sent me the bill or I don't know or I've either been paying thousands and thousands, tens of thousands for a roller or I'm now going to owe someone tens of thousands for a roller while my one sits. And I finally got down to the fact that we had added another problem with that roller, like we were always getting it fixed. And then you guys had just said, come pick up a new roller. And we'd had it for 3 months. So I hadn't seen it. It just so happened that that was the day I saw it and I needed to organise some stickers for it, which actually, like that framed you guys in a great light. Like,
it did.
I don't know what's going on and you don't necessarily know what's going on in the nitty gritty of things anymore. But my team got to the point where they'd had a couple or a few or a lot of, which I don't know, breakdowns. You gave us a new one.
Correct. And you haven't had any issues with it since. So the point to that is there was so by the way, if I'd known that and you'd rung me and this was now, I would definitely fuck with you. I definitely would have said that you purchased it as well. But anyway, let's put that to a side. But I think you know, that was and that's just not that wasn't just for you. We've done that before because like any product, we have issues with some of our machines.
Yep.
You know, if I sat here and said they were perfect, you'd none of the audience would believe me. You wouldn't believe me, right? They are pretty good. They are pretty good.
I had juxtaposed because, like, listen, I'm getting into my essay writing space now. But juxtaposed with that, I bought a machine when I was 23,
mm-hmm.
my first brand new digger,
mm-hmm.
and it broke down 9 times in 450 hours, and that 450 hours took me 8 months to do, 8 or 9 months to mm-hmm. do. Because it was in the factory so much getting pulled apart.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember I was screwed. Mm-hmm. I only had 2 machines and a truck. I had no money. Like, I had an operator who was on. Like, when one thing wasn't working, I did have 3 things. Now I've only got 2 things. Every time I pick it up, it's fine. I went back to the sales manager. I finally got in front of the sales manager and the boss mm-hmm. of the dealership and my sales rep, and I said, my digger is a lemon. It is a piece of shit. And they said, sorry, can't help.
So the analogy that I give with that is every single client that we have come through our doors, right? They could be just purchasing a 1.8 ton. They could be starting out in business. And we get a lot of customers that are starting out in business because they might not be able to afford the top tier.
Yeah, well, they want to see if there's value.
Correct. And so what I always say to everyone is that customer could be a $1 billion company in 10, 20 years' time.
Funny you mention that, because I got a phone call not long ago from the salesman from that meeting.
All right.
When I hadn't been in it long, my gear was shit. That was by far the best. And he said, we're wanting you to try out some of our machines. We've got a new model.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, absolutely no way.
Mm.
No way. Mm. I said, I've driven your machine since. They're not bad. Mm. The machines aren't bad. The deal is shit. And I said, and to be honest, mate, when I sat there and I said that it's a lemon.
Yes.
You looked at me and said, oh, it's had some problems, but it isn't too bad.
And I think that in business as well, is it's you got to be careful you're not pushed around, but it's also about doing the right thing.
If I had known what I knew now, I reckon I would have got something more out of them. Not being because of, the size that I am or the social media or whatever, but just in what I've learned There's consumer protection laws and all of that stuff that people talk about with that. Like there is a point where if it breaks down enough, it is considered that it's correct. A hunk of shit.
Correct.
But I didn't get any of that, and I reckon that sales rep would kick himself a bit because he was in at ground floor with me, and I really liked him. He was young. I was young. He came to my house. We met for breakfast. I was keen. And now however many machines later.
But that's where if we're talking about a dealership or for construction equipment, it's not just about the amount of resource, it's about the mentality of how you support your customers.
Ooh. That's a catchphrase.
I thought long and hard about that one.
I'm using juxtaposing. You're throwing out catch lines.
Yeah, you've always got a good way of cutting me down, but it's true.
I get it from my dad.
Yeah, okay, good.
It really chops you at the knees whenever you're about to soar, and take off. He brings you back down to earth with a thud.
But, again, without getting too squishy, it is about doing fundamentally the right thing for your customers. Obviously, look, we have to make money. Everyone has to make money.
You're rich.
Yeah, but you gotta do the right thing, and you gotta think about it from the customer's perspective, and that is why, when we talk about service and support, and we go back to what our customers are now asking us for now. Yeah, hey, look, we're not as big as the big boys. We're not small, but we're not as big as the big boys. But I can guarantee you, we've got a bloody good attitude, and we will have we do have a customer mindset.
Is there anything, because we've probably been speaking about for long enough now, is there anything else you wanted to say before we wrap it all up? Give it your best. Give it your best go. This could be it for, you might never be on a podcast again, and we might never make it to Serbia again, so give it to them.
Don't buy Chinese diggers. They're rubbish.
See? To me, if I was watching, I'd be like, fuck yeah, I'll listen
to all of them. Yeah, I'm coming down now.
I'm going to buy one.
No, look, I think what I'd say, and again, obviously I would say this, but I would say, we've seen a big change in the market recently.
Yeah.
And we're gunning to be top tier.
Well, from my end, you guys are hungrier than anyone.
Mm.
You're hungrier for business.
Mm.
The product, the support, the everything else like that, the hunger's got to influence that.
Yeah.
From my outcome with buying machines, it influences it.
Correct.
And you're starving.
Correct.
Yeah, so.
Correct. And I think that, what you said, I think I did actually watch something about this, or I read something that you wrote about this.
It's the only time
I gave you some attention, but it was around the mentality. The owner of a dealership, or the might be buying a new boat, or might be deciding they want to spend 6 months in Europe for the year.
Yeah, yeah.
And their headspace might not be in it.
What about if they're 70 years old wanting to pull money off of the table?
Correct.
Yeah. And then how does that influence my warranty?
Correct.
You're 32.
Correct.
You're shooting for the moon.
Correct. And look, don't get me wrong, there's a lot that we've got to learn. and there's a lot that we're learning every day with it, right? So there's I don't pretend to be so arrogant that to say that we know everything.
You're sweating arrogance right now, but yeah. Continue. Yeah. Yep. You okay. And me both, actually.
Yeah, good.
See,
yeah.
There we go. There's my dad chopping
yeah,
you
there
again,
you go.
Just
chop,
as you
chop,
were doing.
Chop me down, chop yeah. me down. But we do, we are hungry. And because we can see an opportunity with the product that we have. And fundamentally, we just like it. Like I just like it. I like the people in the industry. I like the customers. It's a bit of a laugh, and what we do is pretty cool. It's a cool business. It's fun. It's and there's significant opportunity with it as well. So we're not necessarily doing anything any different, but we're trying to do it well. I keep going on about that doing it well.
Values on your wall on a
correct
printed on a curtain.
Correct.
Do it well.
Correct.
Yeah.
But you know, we do see that opportunity with it. We will be, and the brand will be a top tier brand. I have no doubt about it. It's just how long that takes.
Now, I hope that this hasn't come across as any sort of advertisement sort of thing, but at the end of the day, I would get some days 50 messages about why I'm buying, who I'm buying, what I'm buying, what Chinese equipment. Some of the biggest posts I've put on different platforms have been Chinese equipment. So I thank you very much for coming in.
I appreciate your time.
I appreciate your thoughts as well around it. If anyone has any questions, it's Virtu Equipment. If anyone wants a partner, Jimmy Starbuck.
Don't do it or ruin your life.
And thanks for coming.
Thank you very much.
No problem.